Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
I've got so much inside. I've got so much inside.
That's a cut from the children's chorus in the Broadway Roadshow production of School of Rock. Adapted from the 2003 hit movie, the Broadway version digs a bit deeper into the potential disconnect between children's and their parents, even the most well-meaning, even those who will spend $50,000 a year for tuition at an elite private school, but who aren't as willing to spend enough time to get to know their children. In School of Rock, an unlikely hero emerges to bridge that gap, and he uses music. Coming up, we'll hear from two members of the roadshow of the Broadway hit School of Rock, now at the Ohio Theater. For more information on the show, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now is Director of Orchestras at Columbus Academy and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra 2017 Music Education Award winner, Cynthia Bush. Welcome.
Thank you, Ann.
Also with us is the rock band teacher at the Arts and College Preparatory Academy, Noah Demland. Welcome, Noah.
Hi, thank you.
Noah, where were you when the film version of School of Rock came out in 2003? Did it seem like a real thing back then?
I was an undergraduate. I was just finishing up my bachelor's in music education degree, and I was going into a master's degree the next year, so I wasn't really thinking about teaching jobs. But I always wanted to, you know, be a music teacher, but I never really wanted to be a band director necessarily. I always knew that there was something else for me. I grew up playing in rock bands in high school, and I always loved the creativity that was involved in that. And I thought, man, I really want to do something different. But when School of Rock came out, you know, I didn't really take it seriously. It was just kind of a funny movie.
Now, your school is a charter school.
Yes.
And it's a charter, so it's publicly funded. How did you find out about this role? How did you get a job like this?
Well, I student taught at the Arts Impact Middle School with a music teacher there. And the art teacher at that school, Gigi Howard, ended up starting the school that I teach at now as like an alternative for students who don't really fit into their normal schools and things. But when I finished my master's degree, she knew me from student teaching and then called me up and said, hey, we need a music teacher for our school. We don't really have much of a music program yet. Do you want to come and start one? Because we're looking for something different, something that's not, you know, the normal band orchestra choir. And we heard that you would be a good person to do that. And so I started there in 2005 in like the third or fourth year of the school with two broken pianos and a bunch of music stands. And
okay.
Now we have recording studios. We have probably about 100 students at least who are involved in the music program. We have drum sets and rock bands and all kinds of stuff. So it's really been like a dream for me to get to build that program and work with all these students and develop something that's an alternative, like kind of what I always wanted to do when I was an undergraduate but didn't know existed. And then, yeah.
I was in a rock band in junior high and high school, mm-hmm. and we got to play rehearse in the band, the orchestra, you know, in the band room. And the thought of having actually a rock band teacher was impossible to imagine. How did you even begin? How did you start the program?
The first year I had about 12 students who all were at really different levels and all had really different interests. And, you know, so at first I tried a few things like kind of trying to shove them into the model that I had learned in college, which was, you know, concert band and picking pieces that we could do. But the kids were so different. And also the students that come to ACBA are not students who are interested in traditional ways of learning. So they're students who are, instead of being in the orchestra, they're playing guitar alone in their bedrooms. And so they wanted something different. So I said, well, this is not going to be the right model. So I said, well, let's try breaking into some smaller groups. And so students would work on individual projects. And then I had a lot of students that wanted to do songwriting. So from there, we built on that. And I grew up playing in rock bands in high school, too. And it was always such a treat for me as opposed to the concert band I was doing at my normal school. So
right.
I was in both those worlds at the same
yeah.
time. And the kids just wanted something different. So it's sort of gradually developed. And, you know, I still play in bands now. I'm in a band currently. And so a lot of the things that I learned from that world and that I do there, I can bring to my students. So it's just sort of evolved over the course of about 13 years. This is my 13th year now at ACBA.
We're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about music and children and how you teach children music, how you introduce it to them in the first place as a discipline. You just heard from Noah Demland. He's rock band teacher at the Arts and College Preparatory Academy in Columbus. Also with us, Cynthia Bush. She's director of orchestras at Columbus Academy and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra 2017 Music Education Award winner. Cynthia, one of the things I love about the School of Rock is that there is a lot of appreciation for the classics. These kids were in the story. They're all classically they're right. All classically trained musicians. The ones that are trained at all, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of respect for that.
We have a lot of students in our school too. We have my orchestra program this year has 174 students in 10 different ensembles from second grade through 12th grade. And we do some rock music. We have a group in the upper school called Contemporary Ensemble that plays pop, rock, jazz, and some light classics. Then we also spend time in the middle school working on different rock tunes. We have groups that perform after school that put themselves together. But we also do a lot of classically trained classic pieces for competitions and quartets and all kinds of different things. So we have an upper school group that does chamber music that's uncut, original pieces, and that's really fun to do. And then I have everybody down to my little tiny second graders who start out with, hi, what do I do with this instrument?
Here's the triangle, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you introduce music to a young child?
In our school, yeah. We start general music classes in pre-K. So our school is pre-K through 12, mm-hmm. And we have on our faculty 8 full-time and part-time music teachers. So we have something available for everybody. We also have drama and art. So we do musicals in fourth grade, middle school, and upper school. So there's a lot of variety that we do all the time in the year. The best way to introduce really young kids is to just be with them physically, sing with them, sing to them. It's not just playing the radio in the background, but it's actual the physical contact that makes a big difference and helps to develop their neural pathways in their head. I know that sounds really technical.
No, but we know
that it does do that. Yeah, it does. And it makes such a difference. For example, when my daughter was little, we did a lot of singing, but she would also sleep in my studio while I was teaching lessons.
Wow.
And she would walk around the house singing songs that my kids were learning for college auditions or high school tryouts or whatever, and in the key that she heard them, because that's what she knew. So it's amazing, and that's kind of carried over through her life, through both my children's lives have been real involved in music.
Yeah. There's another aspect of School of Rock, and I'm kind of playing off of that because we're all familiar with it, and most of our listeners probably are too. It's the idea of music appreciation, and the teacher Dewey, the rock nerd, is shocked that these kids don't know about the history of rock and roll and why that matters. And that's the same thing as any music appreciation. And mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I watched that movie I thought, well, yeah, they're classics now of rock and roll. How do you feel about that, Noah Demland? Is that sort of funny and ha-ha, or is it a real thing?
You mean the idea of there being classics in rock? Or?
Yeah, and that people would study that.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, we grow up, a lot of us who are classically trained grow up with this idea that Beethoven and Mozart are the masters in the classics, but there are so many different types of music beyond just Western art music, right? There's rock, there's music from all over the world in different cultures, and everybody's going to have their own different classics. And mm-hmm. So I think to have that idea of the classics as being, you know, Mozart and Beethoven and those guys is a very limited view of music. But music is so huge, it's infinite, right? So I think it's important to look at those classics, but also not to be so intimidated by these classics that, you know, as composers or as musicians, we think, well, I can never be the Beatles. I should just not bother. But that we use those as inspiration and kind of carry forward from that. And
do you ever have your students listen to music that you wanted them to understand where something's coming from and where you're coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I also try to expose them to music beyond just the typical classics that we think of. So like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and things. I try to have them listen to a lot of underground artists too, who people that they might not normally discover, but that might be really interesting or inspiring to them. Because I like to think about listening to music for my students as just putting ideas in their heads. So I want them not to listen to just the typical classics that we hear on the radio, but also things that might challenge them or things that might spark new ideas so that they can draw from that when they're creating their own music.
Cynthia Bush, is music appreciation, like we're discussing it now, is that a part of the curriculum?
Yes, definitely. We do music appreciation starting with students when they're in the lower school and all the way up through our upper school ensembles, too.
What is that like? How do you do that?
Well, it's kind of like what Noah's saying. We study different artists and we study different groups and we play music and we do some background on those. We listen to them. We always do some listening before we perform something so we know how it's going to sound, and then we can use that. Sometimes we take things in class and we do a mashup of different pieces, or we'll take a section and we'll say, okay, let's restructure this. Let's redo it. How would you like to play it? How would you change it up so that it becomes something a little bit different? One of my middle school groups right now is doing a mashup of a real classical tune and a non-classical, a rock tune. So we're kind of putting things together.
And they're actually writing the music for that?
And no, they're not writing the music. I'm kind of giving them some guidelines, but they're working with that to create their own version of a piece.
Music teachers aren't all about finding the next great star. I'm wondering what inspired you to become a teacher. Was it, Noah, that you just sort of fell into it, or were you trained in it in grad school, or what?
Yeah, I started out at Ohio State with my undergraduate, and I had planned to be a music major. I knew that music was a huge part of my life, and that, I mean, I decided that when I was about 12 or 13, that music was what I wanted to do with my life. And I think I started out like a lot of people, thinking, well, I'll be a performer, but I'll teach just to make some money on the side, or I'll do that just in case it doesn't work out, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And then I took my first education class as a music education major at OSU, and I just fell in love with it immediately and was like, this is not just a side job. This is not something to do just to earn money while I do my real work. This is what I really want to do. This is really important to me. And I think it's important work. And I still perform and do that stuff on the side too, but I think those things both inform each other. It's not one or the other. It's the teaching and the performing both influence the other.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cynthia, yeah, what about you?
It's wonderful to be able to watch the children grow and develop and use their music for other studies that they do in school. They're just so much better at thinking creatively and thinking on a much higher level of, you know, putting things together, because they're using physical skills and oral skills and visual skills all simultaneously and all very quickly. And I think for me, I love teaching not just from, well, when I taught in Cleveland, I also taught inner city students, and it was great seeing the kids come together to make something happen, even though they're coming from completely different backgrounds. And the same thing even now at our school, we have children who come from all over the world with lots of different backgrounds, and to be able to come together and work on something. And from the times that I've played professionally, wow, I mean, you get an orchestra of people together and your goal is to create one piece that sounds fantastic. And all of the things that separate us in our culture that we fight about in this country and discriminate against, nobody pays any attention to that because you're all there. So we're really celebrating our diversity and making things really beautiful and creative.
You know, my experience was, it's very, you know, you're really exposing yourself, particularly once you get into that formal band situation where they do the tryouts or they do the, you know, they go one by one through the whole mm-hmm. thing and see who knows what on the part. And you do it and people still accept you. And even if you're last chair, for, you know, or middle chair and never make it to that first chair experience, you're still accepted in the group. There's a lot of teamwork.
Absolutely. We have lots of teamwork. In fact, in my orchestras, I make the group non-competitive. So we're not fighting for chairs. We rotate. We sit around, just like the Columbus Symphony. We rotate chairs. We move around. We play in different combinations with people. And the idea is that we work together as a team rather than, you know, we're fighting for who gets to be first.
There's
or
not
who
a hierarchy.
Gets to be second. Yeah, right. Because it's really all about creating something beautiful together rather and working together. And that's really what I believe in as far as the students are concerned.
I want to talk more about that and that sense of hierarchy in music when we return. In the meantime, listeners, what was your experience learning music as a child? What worked for you? What didn't? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. My guests are Cynthia Bush. She's director of orchestras at Columbus Academy and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra 2017 Music Education Award winner. Also, Noah Demland. He's rock band teacher at the Arts and College Preparatory Academy. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the role of music in the lives of children and the people who teach music to children. Coming up, we'll hear from two members of the cast of the Broadway Roadshow of School of Rock, now at the Ohio Theater. For more information, you can check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Still with us is the director of orchestras at Columbus Academy and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, 2017 Music Education Award winner, Cynthia Bush, and rock band teacher at the Arts and College Preparatory Academy, Columbus Charter School, Noah Demland. Listeners, what was your experience growing up when it came to music? Do you remember your teachers? Do you remember, was there a special moment that solidified your love of music? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Noah, how does it work, that sense of hierarchy that we've talked about and that Cynthia tries to, and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra has people rotating in chairs so that to eliminate that and make it more of a team experience. How does that work when you're talking about a rock band?
Well, in a rock band, there is no first chair.
But there's usually a leader of the band.
Well, yeah, and a lot of that can be personality, too. It's not necessarily about how good you are. So I have students that come to me with 10 years of guitar lessons privately, and I have other students who just start playing when they get to ACBA. So I have students who've only been playing maybe the drums for a year or two. And those students are all working together in a band. So there's a lot of peer teaching. There's a lot of just collaboration and cooperation. But I tell the students that it's not about how fast you can play or how many notes you can play or how good, quote-unquote, of a player you are, but it's what you can contribute to the music. So someone who doesn't know very much about the guitar can still contribute something creative and interesting. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to
like
be...
Like what? Give me an example.
Maybe there's a band with a bunch of students who are really strong musicians who've been playing for a long time, and then there's a kid who plays, you know, the shaker or the triangle or something like that. Even just a little bit of triangle can really make the music come alive, or can just add these really delicate touches that sound fantastic, even if the student doesn't play a lot of notes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the other side of that, I think it's easy for people who are experienced musicians to want to play lots of notes and to show off their skills, but that's not always the most interesting thing to listen to. So I think it's all about teaching the kids to make interesting contributions with what they can offer and to be creative with what they already have and to work with what they've got. To say something and not just to say something beyond, look at how fast I can play, look how many notes I can play.
Yeah. Some of the kids are better than others, Cynthia Bush. I mean, that's just the way it is in life. How do you help the kids who maybe are gifted and give them what they need and also elevate the other kids who can get something different from the experience?
We have children in our school that are actually national award winners for music. All the way down to kids who are just learning for the very first time. And we pair them up and they can do some cooperative learning, help to teach each other different skills. And it's great because they like learning from each other. They admire those who have advanced, and the ones who have advanced feel great about when somebody they're working with suddenly gets a new skill. I find it really inspiring, too, when you've been teaching for a while and you've taught some concept and all of a sudden somebody raises their hand and goes, you know, if we did it this way, it would be easier. And you go, yes. thank you for figuring that out on your own. You know, it's great to be able to see how much they can inspire each other and help each other along the way.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to tell us a story about your life growing up and music. Have you ever had to deal with parents who just didn't understand why their child loves music? Because that's a theme in the film and in the Broadway production of School of Rock, is parents just don't get it. This is, they want their kids to master science and math and, you know, those classical education subjects. Noah?
Yeah, at ACBA we don't have a lot of that just because students
they're
there for the arts most in many cases. I've had students before who, you know, if I go into a parent-teacher conference and say, oh, your student's doing really great in percussion, and they say, well, but look, they're failing science. Like, who cares what they're doing in percussion?
Right.
You know, I feel like it's good for kids to have something that they're excelling at school, whether it's science or math or dance or percussion or art or whatever, because it makes them want to be at school. And if when they come to school for drums or whatever, then they're still there. They're learning the math and they're learning the other things. And I think that music has a lot to offer. I mean, we're learning about cooperating and working with other people. We're listening and making creative choices and learning about work ethic and all those things. So I think that those skills that we learn in music transfer to other things.
Yeah. Cynthia?
One of the things that happens, I don't have parents that are really against learning music or don't understand it, because it's pretty much involved in everybody's life at our school. But I do have students that get really frustrated sometimes because they want to be really successful at something and they just don't know how to do it. So what I work on, especially in private lessons or small groups, is breaking things down into smaller chunks and working on a specific problem and then rebuilding things. And I go, let's apply this to something else you're studying. So maybe you're having a really hard time in math or in science. So how could we go about studying that in this way? So the skills that you're learning in music, you're applying in other subjects
too. Can you give me an example of what you mean by that?
Yeah. For example, I had a student who was a fairly new student, and he had like a 16-bar piece that we had been playing in school. He's new to the group, and he's like, I don't get this. I've tried so hard, I just don't get it. And I go, well, let's take it a measure at a time. Let's figure out the rhythm. Let's get the notes in place with the rhythm. Now let's look at what happens with your bow. So we break it into little chunks, and then we learn the next measure, and then we put the two together. I go, okay, so now let's look at what you're studying in math. Maybe you need to do a complicated, you know, equation. So what's the first step? Well, how would you break that into something smaller that you know how to do and then build it into something bigger? And it works really well. I mean, he left the lesson feeling really successful that, wow, in 20 minutes I figured out this piece and now I have a way to work it out and I can use that in my other classes too. So that's the kind of thing that you want your students to learn sometimes in music is it's just a process. It's just a process. And in addition, you're learning a piece that you can play for other people and you can continue playing. A lot of my kids continue playing through college. They continue in local groups when they're finished and with school. And
they never give it up.
They never give it up. And that's really the beauty of it, is it's something you can use your whole life.
Right, know? Right. Let's see, Rosemary in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, Ann. I'm actually a Spartan, and I picked my dorm so I could live near the Michigan State Marching Band practice field.
Which dorm did you live in?
I lived in the West Circle dorms, Landon and Mayo.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been playing piano. I'm 61. I've been playing since I've been 7, and I've taken lessons kind of all throughout my life. I never planned to be a music major. But I think the main thing that all my teachers did was they allowed me to bring a book of music to my lessons that was something that I wanted to play. So mm-hmm. even though I had classical music and, you know, had my hand in exercises and Czerny and Mozart and everything else, and I still play all that today, I always had a book or a piece or some kind of sheet music that I was learning that was something that I picked out. And maybe the teachers didn't exactly love it all the time, but they were all receptive to the fact that if you work on these things, then you can also work on something that you enjoy playing. So,
that's a really interesting point and something that I wanted to bring up, Noah. You know, in some cases, they're actually writing their own music. But there is this kind of a new thing to be introducing contemporary music or whatever the kids are listening to the curriculum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what you do. I guess mm-hmm. Cynthia Bush, I mean, it's kind of newer for band. I mean, I was still, when I was in junior high and high school, we were still playing, you know, John Philip Sousa.
Well, in orchestra, we have a lot of different students who come with lots of different backgrounds. And I have kids who bring things into their lessons all the time. They want to do show tunes or they want to do a book of Coldplay or, you know, a favorite rock artist. And we definitely work on those things as well.
Yeah. Rosemary, what did you bring?
Usually when I was younger, my mother had a big influence on me, like learning to play Frank Sinatra music and Tony Bennett. But like right now with my current piano teacher, I'm working on music from La La Land, and my children have both taken lessons over many years, guitar and piano, and I always made sure that their teachers had, you know, the knowledge or understood that, yes, you can work on all these things, but please let my kids pick out a book. Now it's not even a book. Pick out something from sheetmusic.com online bring it along to the lesson and learn it. So I can take the rest of the comment off the air.
All right, Rosemary. Thanks a lot for calling, and go Sparty.
Thanks. Same to you.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks. Let's see. Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I started playing piano in the second grade, and then when I hit fifth grade, we had an assembly at school about band instruments, and so I decided that I wanted to play the trombone. So by the time I started playing trombone in the fifth grade, I'd been playing piano for 3 years and was fairly well versed at playing four-note chords. And I had two or three lessons on the trombone, and I was thinking how ridiculously simple this was, and I just presumed at some point I would learn how to play more than one note at a time. So about my fifth lesson, I asked my band teacher when he was going to teach me how to play more than one note at a time, and he gave me a very odd look, and he said that he was never going to do that because you never play more than one note at a time on the trombone. So I was the only person in fifth or sixth grade to select the trombone, so I got solo lessons. So I would practice my part for an upcoming concert, and the trombone very rarely has any of the melodic line or really does anything at all musical on its own. It's more of a oomph here and a pah there. Mm-hmm. And I was almost getting kind of discouraged about playing. And then finally we had our first full rehearsal with about 25 or so fifth and sixth graders. And the director raised his baton and it all just fit together. And it was just a truly magical moment for me. I think one of the more important moments in my life when, you know, it was just like, oh, so this is what it's all about.
Right.
That's my memory.
That's a wonderful memory. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Wow, that is pretty
great.
Cool.
Yeah.
I didn't play in a concert band until I was in junior high, and before that I just had lessons on the flute, and I sort of had that same experience, except that I was completely petrified when I got in the band room and realized, oh my gosh. I mean, I think I made the point earlier, you're really exposing yourself to other people. That's a skill in itself, or that's a life lesson, wouldn't you say, Noah Demi?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had so many conversations with students about that, about just, you know, when you do make yourself vulnerable that way, you open yourself up to some really amazing experiences, but there's also some challenges with that, and we learn how to talk through those challenges and work through that in our classroom, too.
Yeah. You know, is there, you know, kids are judged. They judge. They make fun of each other. They do all kinds of horrible things. Is that an issue, Cynthia Bush, as far as when you do have those more elite performers?
No, actually, we do playing tests in class, and you have to play individually. You get to you play twice, and in between time, we can make comments to help you out so that the second time around you'll catch some things you didn't catch the first time. But they're not allowed to be derogatory comments, and they're not allowed to be general things like, oh, that was the most wonderful thing I ever heard, because that doesn't really help you improve. So students will make comments in between. We'll do a second playing, and then I'll grade the best of what I hear. And they become really good at saying things in a very kind way, but very specific. you know, this F sharp was a little low in this measure, or this rhythm was a little off. And I think you can get that if you do this.
And that's training, you know, their ear as well.
It's training their ear, and it's training them how to respond to people in a cooperative, kind way instead of just slashing them apart or whatever that, you know, sometimes happens. And I think it works really well with our kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I was petrified, and the he went through one by one through class that day to hear what we had to say on our instrument. And he said, well, you have good tone, because I'm not sure I hit one right note. But he thought I had good tone, and that I clung to that, you know.
Actually, I had a friend who became worked for the Geauga County Soil and Conservation Department. And she said the thing that was the greatest thing to help her out was learning to play cello and getting up and playing in front of people and doing competitions, because it's really difficult to get up in front of a group of people who have done something the same way for a number of years and say, okay, there's an issue with erosion and we need to correct it by changing how you use your tools and how you, you know, farm your land and whatever. And she said it helped her greatly to have had the experience, and she knew how to handle herself and say things in a kind way and help people to make changes.
Yeah. How do you, what about the idea of, you know, a couple callers, you know, I think the last caller started playing the trombone, and that is kind of a rite of passage in the fifth grade for some reason. I guess they decide what music, what instrument you'll play. And Noah Demlin, from where you sit, how do you approach that if when a student doesn't have an instrument yet and they want to learn something? How do you decide what, or help them decide?
Well, at our school, we offer introductory courses in piano, guitar, and percussion. And so they're a little bit limited to one of those things. So,
but they can try them all?
They can try them all. All of our freshmen take a class called Arts Foundations, where they get to try all of the different arts that we have to offer. So they do music, dance, visual art, instrumental or vocal music, instrumental music, and theater. So they try everything, and they get to try a lot of different instruments with me. And so then they can choose if they want to go into percussion the next year or guitar the next year. And if they go and get a car, they can also go to the bass from that if they want to do that. So they are a little bit limited in their choices, but they can do a lot with those choices, I guess.
Yeah. And Cynthia Bush, how about you?
Well, our kids start in second grade, so they're tiny people. And
they can do anything?
Violin, viola, cello, and if they're really big, bass. But usually I save that till third or fourth grade. And the great thing about string instruments is they come in lots of sizes. So you can get them really tiny to fit you. And we choose instruments by what type of sound you like. If you like high sounds, medium sounds, or low sounds, that helps to determine. And they try out the instruments, and they can go and choose one that will fit them. And it becomes like a little personal friend. They have names for them, and they take care of them. And then as they grow, they can move up to a bigger size.
Any sense, as you know, you teach strings, do you find somebody, they've got the right ear, they've got this or that, but the string isn't, you know, the strings aren't for them? Or do you think the strings are for everybody?
Well,
does that make sense?
I guess, yeah. It's accessible to everybody.
Because, you know, when you in typical fifth grade, you know, they introduce you to instruments. You take some kind of test. I can't even remember what it was. And then they say, well, you'd be good on the flute, or you'd be good on
That's based on the size of you, your embouchure when you're playing. And we do that in our sixth grade. You can play a band instrument.
Okay.
Or you can sing. We do singing all the way up through from pre-K too. The nice thing about strings is we put tapes on the instrument that show you where to put your fingers. So it's like playing guitar where there's frets.
Uh-huh.
You also have the ability to learn to read the music and do the bowing. And I haven't really ever run into anybody that's really been unable to play at some level.
Right.
And I've had kids who've been handicapped and severely burned and different things that have had a really good successful experience too.
Well, I want to thank you both for sharing your experiences with us today. Cynthia Bush, Director of Orchestras at Columbus Academy and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra 2017 Music Education Award winner. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Noah Demlin, rock band teacher at Arts and College Preparatory Academy. Thanks to you as well. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to hear from two members of the cast of School of Rock, the Broadway roadshow version that's now at the Ohio Theater. For more information on that, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher.
Where did the rock go? Where's the joy I used to know way back when? Where's the magic of the moment? Something rock could ever capture. Now the only thing I'm hearing are the echoes disappearing. That's
a cut from the Broadway musical roadshow of School of Rock, now at the Ohio Theater. For more information about the show, you can visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. Joining us now is Deidre Lang. She plays Ms. Scheinkopp in the School of Rock musical. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Lexi Dorsett Sharp. She plays Rosalie, the character singing that cut from the Broadway production of School of Rock. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
To both of you, you know, when you're watching a show like that, I just can't help but wonder, what is it like to work with a cast filled with really talented kids? I mean, in some cases, young kids. I mean, Lexi, you're the principal.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think what's really cool with this show is I got a chance to talk with our choreographer, Joanne, and she said, you know, the idea behind this with the team, what they really wanted with the kids was kids that weren't too polished.
Yeah.
They actually wanted, you know, kids that were musicians first, which sometimes in theater, I've done a lot of work actually with kids in theater.
Okay.
And a lot of times they're more, you know, theater background and they have that kind of discipline that comes with theater. And these kids, what's awesome about them is a lot of them, most of them are coming from musician backgrounds. And so when looking for the kids, that's what they were really looking for, so that on stage, what they're doing is more real. It's less musical theater robot, and it's really real kids rocking out. And it's incredible. I mean, these kids are proficient, you know, completely proficient at these instruments at 10, 11, 12. You know, it kind of...
Completely proficient. And in fact, they're phenomenal in some cases.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the show, they say that they make that one announcement. Yes, they are all actually playing these instruments.
Yeah. And the other cool thing about the kids is that they all not only play one instrument, but they all can play, like the ones that do play drums, they play the piano, they play, you know, whatever other instruments. So, and then they're all actors and singers too. So
yeah,
they're a really talented group of kids.
We like to say they're quadruple threats because they can sing, act, dance, and play instruments. You know,
and like, still be kids and still have
and
fun.
And still be kids. And that's really what I was talking about. You know, it's still the element of they're having fun on stage. They're so alive and to be in scenes with them, they're there. You know, mm-hmm. they still have that kid energy and wonder. It's awesome. It's awesome.
There is a real sparkle to it, and I love the choreography. Mm-hmm. I love that it's not kids
dancing.
Jumping up and down.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Which is like, actually, I love to dance like that too. And my niece can't take it anymore, but the idea of it looks like they're really having fun and they're not doing the same move every time.
Yeah, the dance is really coming from the story. And that's, you know, really what's awesome, I think, about the show in general is I think so much of it is story driven, you know, whether it's the movement, whether it's the music, you know, a lot of times in a musical, and we still have these moments, of course, where all of a sudden a character just busts into song. Well, you know, you get to see the setup a little bit in this show. It's like, oh, well, we're going to create a song together. Dewey's creating songs with the kids.
Yeah. You know, I was just visiting a classroom in a local school district, happens to be Upper Arlington, and the kids in this school, they get to design their own classroom. And I saw a lot of that in just the staging of this show. The classroom is very casual once they get the desks out of the way.
Mm-hmm, right.
The whole vibe, I've read different descriptions of the scenery or the stage design in different productions of the show. What does that matter when it comes to a program like this, Deidre? I mean, does it affect how you do your job?
Yeah, I mean, scenery, it's nice to have a lot of scenery around, but for a show with kids with so much talent,
yeah,
you actually don't need so much.
They are the scenery.
You know,
scenery.
They are the scenery. And I like the way everything, you know, kind of works together where they can, like, for instance, they have the chalkboard and it turns around and everything that, you know, happens. It all has a meaning. So,
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The transitions were choreographed, you know, in our show and really well thought out of who moves what, because you really want to see, like she's saying, the chalkboard, you know, is turned around. All of it has a meaning. And it's really awesome to see the kids, you know, scooting their desks off stage and coming in. You really get to see the idea of these kids loosening up when Dewey Finn is around.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Teachers always say that they learn from their students, you know, all the best teachers, they say. Do you learn from the youngsters in the cast? Deidre?
Yeah, I mean, I have two kids.
Okay.
So it helps to, you know, not to take so much, take life so seriously. You know, like with them, like you'll be backstage and I'll play with like little Billy and have fun. And they know how to, you know, they have fun, but then they also know when it's time to get on stage, it's time to perform. You know, so it helps you to like not, you know, I'm an adult, but I can have those times of being like a kid, you know, so you can learn a lot.
Kids, how long are you on the road with them?
Well, we all have like year contracts.
Okay.
So I don't know about the kids. I think the kids have like a 6-month contract, but pretty much, and they're little kids. So I think that they'll probably, and that's probably why they hired them like that. So they can go ahead and do a whole, you know, a whole year. Cause they grow. I did Lion King.
Fast,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
I did Lion King and I remember how, you know, the kids would just grow. They start really little and then they just grow so quick. You know, but I think we'll probably be on the road for at least a year with all the kids and everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you learn from them?
Absolutely. I mean, it's so funny. I think the biggest lesson I learn from them every day is staying in the moment. You know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the kids. I mean, you're on stage if something happens. You know, it's live theater. That's what's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and how they just naturally react, you know, and that's, I feel like so much of my training or, you know, is about going back to that childlike innocence. It's about going back to that, just react to the moment. If something happens, reaction. And somewhere along the way, you know, as adults, we learn to, do what we need to keep everything calm and keep everything in control.
Yeah. Right.
And you see these kids, they're just, oh, well, moving on, you know? So I think really the main lessons I learned from them are being in the moment and, you know, moving on to the next moment, you know, at any time and letting things in the past just go.
Just
you know,
the
they
past.
Just move on. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I took a couple of acting classes when I was in college and trust was a big function in there.
Absolutely.
And how did you ever worry about trusting the kids? Like you worked in Lion King,
yeah.
Deidre, and there are a lot of children in that production
right.
as well. Any issues about trust with kids and trusting that they're going to pull through?
These kids that go into the performing arts, they're a little bit different. It's like it clicks with them and they know what to do,
uh-huh.
you know, and they do it. I've never had, you know, any problems. And then if there is a problem, they just go ahead and go with the flow like she was saying.
Yeah.
And, I've never had any problems with them. Actually, there was one kid though I did Hairspray.
Uh-huh.
And there was only one kid in the show. And usually all these other shows, they have a lot of kids, so they have friends. And she started playing around too much, and some of the adults started to get a little upset. But I was like, you know, she's a kid. She doesn't have anybody else to play with. We are her friends, you know. So that was the only other time. And then they ended up bringing in an adult in later to play that part of the kid.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, she did a great job. It was Little Inez. So she was, you know, it was a great... it was a great time. She was a good little
the daughter
girl.
Of the music promoter.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
I remember that. Yeah, that's a good role. Yeah,
yeah.
How are the kids managed on the road?
They travel with sometimes it's one guardian, sometimes it's two. So they have their guardians, and then we also have what we lovingly refer to as our child wranglers. So we have a few people who are backstage. The parents, you know, are not backstage. It's not that they are the child wranglers. Are the ones who take the kids from their areas of the dressing room, walk them to stage. You know, we have that. And then they have tutors as well on the road.
Okay.
So they're very well, you know, cared for. And what's really awesome is all of these kids seem to really get along very well, which, you know, is not always the case. And some of that is probably just luck. And some of that is also that I feel like all the way around they've cast really nice people on this tour.
Whenever I talk to people that are on tours, though, you know, the Broadway tours, they always talk about that it's like a family. Anyway.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, because you are away from so many comforts. You're away from your, you know, biological family. You're away from your apartment. You are all coming together to do this common, you know, goal of sharing the arts around the country. And sometimes, you know, if it's an international tour, internationally. And so I think that does, it goes back to what you were saying about trust, actually. It does require an element of trust and getting to know people pretty quickly. I mean, we also spend so much time together. We travel together, you know, and even when you're in a city, we stay in the same hotel. And even if you sometimes are trying to get away, you're bound to see someone, you know, at the Starbucks
same restaurant
from the show. Yeah, absolutely. Right. And so I think that that does create a family like environment. You know?
And we lucked up. Our group is so sweet. Like, I love all the adults, you know, in this show. And the kids are good, too. So,
yeah.
We have a good group.
How long have you guys been on the road with this show?
We just started. We started rehearsals around August, mm-hmm. the beginning of August in New York City.
Okay.
And then we moved on to Rochester. And we were in Rochester like three weeks.
Mm-hmm. Tech the show and opened in Rochester.
We opened there.
And Columbus is our second stop.
Okay. Second stop. So we're real new.
Yeah. You know, with the kids, I'm sure, like you said, even when you don't want to see people in the cast, you bump into them in the restaurants and that kind of a thing. But with the kids, how do they get away? You know, they're still kids.
Yeah. They, it's really funny. Almost every dinner break, during rehearsals, and they're still doing this now, they all have those Razor scooters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so they literally, spend their breaks outside just being kids, you know, and you can see several of them. They pack it, you know, they pack up those compact scooters and that's something that you see.
And there's that great park right behind the theater now.
Yeah. And that's what they do. They go out there and they're kids, you know? And so I think part of what they do to get away is just get outside, literally get outside, you know, because sometimes our rehearsals, especially in tech, when we were there for long hours to be indoors for so long, they get to go outside and run out some of that energy, you know.
And it's kind of like being at school for them because it's such a big group of kids that they have each other. So they don't have to be lonely. So they can, like, you know, they can be performers at night and then they can be kids during the day and play.
When they're tutored, are they alone tutored or do they tutor as a group? Or
I think it's a small group most of the time. And then some of the parents, I believe, are some of these kids that have maybe done more theater and have done a lot of professional theater up to this point that were already homeschooled or continuing on that track.
Okay.
So we do have several kids that have a big theater background. And a lot of times that is those children are our swings, which are offstage covers.
Okay.
Just because they have to have kind of that sort of brain of being able to watch. You know, they might cover for two or three, four different tracks. So at that point, you do need a little bit more of the theater mind and training of, okay, this is how this tracks through.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of those kids were, some of them were already on a homeschool track with their parents, and they're just continuing with that.
Well, I want to thank both of you for talking about kids.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know it's hard, and I appreciate the time you've given us today.
Yeah,
thank
you bet.
You.
Thank you for having us.
That is Deidre Lang. She plays Ms. Shinecop in School of Rock, and also Lexi Dorsett-Sharp plays Rosalie in School of Rock. Thanks for listening today. We're going to let you go with a song from the show. It's called You're in the Band. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lynott, All Sides interns Kyle McKinnon, Courtney Gilbert, Dan Posniak, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue.